Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is a Wednesday, April 27th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the internet at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for almost 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also just click a link and download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a PDF file. Download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, and you can get access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. I haven't mentioned it in a while, but you can also find a link there for a powerful 24.5-minute PowerPoint presentation prepared by Bill Cosentino in concert with Dr. Michael Rice that Michael Rice says summarizes 35 years of his knowledge and experience working with the worksheet process. So you can learn more quickly, more deeply about the worksheet process and the dynamics that empower it. And you can watch that over and over again. You can either click on the link from that webpage or you can find it on their YouTube site. It's the PowerPoint presentation about the Reality Management Worksheet process. And also, as I've mentioned, most of these intros, there's a host of audio files that have been curated out from the last 11-plus years of this internet show. And you can listen to those repeatedly, and they can serve as a tutorial for you to figure out, to learn more in detail, to see living examples of how people have gained powerful positive benefit from the application of these tools and have these living examples of what that process looks like in those audio files. And we hope people do that soon and often because it frequently leads to comments, questions, answers, testimonials, And if you have any of those to share with us, we encourage you to give us a call at 563-999-3581. And when you call that number, if you press the number 1 on your phone, it lets me know that you have a question or a comment, and I will turn on your microphone and announce you by your area code. And that's always that's something we encourage on a regular basis. I don't think I've ever, aside from having a specific person that I'm interviewing on one of the shows, I don't think I've ever had a time where I didn't invite comments and questions. And as Susan said, she was glad to hear me say, even if I'm in the middle of reading something, feel free to put up your hand and press number 1 and let me know you've got a comment or a question, whether it's for clarification or refutation. And we appreciate the input and the interactive nature of your comments and questions. Also this year, we've been going through the Way of Mastery. We've been going rather carefully and slowly through the Way of Mastery, and I frequently use the term methodically because my hope is to share with people the tools, the way in which my eye and ear has pulled out of this work ideas, practices, ways of looking at my life and my thought processes, ways of understanding the creation that I produce of my emotions and my response to every event in my life. And then give me a way to practice that better. Because great spiritual teachings like this are literally proposing a way of looking at the world that's diametrically opposed to what I was raised with in the Western culture. Literally proposing that rather than being my guide, my intellectual mind is supposed to simply be a little tool that I pick up from time to time, and as soon as I'm done using it, I put it down again. And yesterday, before I got the call from Susan and we did some discussion, I was reviewing the lesson titles. The first lesson is titled The Way That Calls You Home, and it introduces the concept that each of us is creating our experience of life in each moment by how we choose to focus our conscious awareness, and there's a lot of choice involved in how we experience anything that happens. And then the second lesson is titled You Create Your Experience, so it refines it even more. One of the headings in that second chapter that we talked about in detail was mastery arises from innocence. This is directly contradictory to what the Western mind says, that mastery arises from hard work and dedication and putting your nose to the grindstone and never taking no for an answer. And this work is trying to introduce us to an entirely different approach to living our lives and to growing in awareness and having experiences and learning from them and asking to be shown and developing an awareness of a level of consciousness that's other than the conscious logical mind. The third lesson is titled The Power of Forgiveness. And in that lesson, it just picks up on the first two lessons and expands them even more specifically and says, not only are you creating your experience of every event that unfolds in your life, you have actually created every experience you have, and your mind tells you it's of another person or about another person. And in the power of forgiveness, it lets us know that to forgive means to dismantle the negative perceptions we have created about our life and about the people we interact with. It has nothing to do with anybody outside of us or anything outside of us. I'm not forgiving another person. I am forgiving. I'm dismantling my perceptions of the person if they are negative in any way. And the fourth lesson was talking about how to identify and learn to tune into and following the thread of desire. Desire in this work is defined as this ultimately subtle and ultimately powerful energy of creation that is working to flow through each and every one of us in every moment. And so lesson four again brings us into questioning. And questioning, what's mine to do here? And what would light, love, the flow of creation itself want to express through me in each new present moment? And make that a practice. Make it a practice to be in the moment and question, what is that still small voice within me trying to express? How can I be a blessing to myself and others in this moment? And the fifth lesson talks about the keys to the kingdom, beginning with learning to tune into that energy of desire, and then stepping into how this practice of keeping my intention focused on staying aligned with that energy of creation, and then watching for the early warning signs of any kind of tension or restriction or resistance to the flow of life, and drop that and move into allowance, and then surrender in each moment to be taught by the flow of life. Again, asking to be shown, understanding that there's far more going on in any one moment than even the data. Is there 20 trillion bits of data hitting my senses? There's far more going on than that. And there's far more going on than my conscious logical mind can register, because my senses are only picking up a fraction of what's actually going on in life. And then in lesson five says, if I do that on a regular basis, I practice those first four things, my life experience is going to become so much more pleasurable for me. I'm going to prefer my experience of life so much more that it's going to be tempting for me to take credit for it. And that's where the fifth key to the kingdom comes in, and recognizing, wait a minute, of myself I do nothing, but the power of creation through me can do all these things. But I don't even know when I was made. I don't know who made me. I don't know how I was made. I don't know how to keep my heart pumping. I don't know how to keep my breath moving. I don't know how to digest the food I eat. So I'm best positioned to learn and to be of use in the flow of life when I understand I am divinely ignorant in each new present moment. And then lesson six is titled, Love Heals All Things. And of course, we talked about how in order for that to have any validity, you either have to have a very, very narrow definition of love or a very expansive, all-inclusive definition of love. And it talks about how if I'm in any form of tightness or tension or judgment, my perception is distorted, I'm not seeing things accurately, and in order to get to the point where I see things accurately, I've got to get back to the space of being in deep appreciation for my own existence and the flow of life around me. And then lesson seven talks about what's needed for you to wake up to the awareness that you are connected to the mind of Christ. They call it birthing the mind of Christ. And that's a lesson where it talked very, very differently about the concept of fear and the energy of fear. And they tell a story about how every time we fail to speak our truth or step into our greatness, it's because in the moment before that, we decided to believe that there was something we could lose of value and something more powerful than us could take it away from us, or that there's something of value that we need to acquire that we're going to be blocked from getting. So we create fear where there is none and where there is no danger, and we move ourselves from the state of openness to the state of contraction. And then Lesson 8 talks about the power of choosing the focus of our conscious awareness. And it uses the image of a pebble dropping into a still, clear pool. And every time a pebble drops into a pool of water where the surface is completely calm, that pebble creates a ripple. And the ripple moves out from where the pebble went in and goes out to the edge of the pond and bounces off and comes back. The quality of the thoughts that we choose to give value to create the quality of the energy that we're sending out from us, that we're communicating to the world about what we value, and those energies are going to come back towards us. And they're going to create the energies that we are living and breathing in the next moment, and the next moment, and the next moment. And it mentions it in Lesson 8, but it really comes back and strengthens it in Lesson 9, that in case you have a tendency to believe in karma and that you're going to get punished tomorrow for the bad choices you made last week, this teaching wants you to know that in each new present moment, you remain as you were created to be. You are infinitely free to choose the focus of your conscious awareness in each new present moment. And that is the dynamic that creates your experience of life in that moment. As such, you're never a victim of the world you see. You're not even a victim of the choices you made last week, last month, last year, the last 10 years, the last 50 years. Because in each new present moment, as those energies ripple back to you from whatever choices you've made in valuing certain thoughts and beliefs, as those energies come back to you, you remain infinitely free to choose again, as Diedrich Wolzak would say. How are you going to interpret and respond to these? How are you going to experience these energies? And then in the ninth lesson that we just finished reading the other day, the title of the lesson is All Events Are Neutral. And so I hope you can gather from all of these headings and these lessons what I was saying earlier about how these teachings are diametrically opposed to the teachings of our Western culture that says that's bad, that's good, this is wrong, that's right, this person never should have done that, that shouldn't be done here. And all of those processes of thought that we call judgment create tension. And they create the illusion of distance and separation. And this lesson is trying to wake us up. Lesson 9 was trying to wake us up to the idea that it is our choice of interpretation of events that gives them whatever impact they have on us. And that all events are neutral. And that everybody creates their own interpretation of events. And so we have people who will go to war. They'll have a raging argument. They'll have a verbal argument, a physical argument about how that's not neutral and that's bad and you need to, not all thoughts are the same. And this work says, yes, this is true. It understands that while all the events are neutral, my thoughts about these events are not neutral, that I am indeed imbued with this power of creation, which we call mind energy in Dr. Rice's work, or we call conscious thought, or we call it the focus of our conscious awareness. And what I choose to focus on and give value to, That is not neutral because that is what creates my experience of the life events. Now, we've only read through that lesson 9 once, and my pattern has been to read through these lessons at least twice, but today I'm called to move on because these two lessons, 9 and 10, for me, they weave together. And the title of the 10th lesson is that the way is easy and without effort. Now, I don't know anybody who's been raised in the Western world who hears that and says, oh, yeah, I agree. Oh, that's been my experience totally. Everything about my life has been easy. Instead, what I've experienced, the people I've been raised with, the world I grew up in, said this is absolute garbage. That is not the truth. And the first thing that comes to my mind when I read the title of Lesson 10, and the title reads, The Way is Easy and Without Effort, the first thing that comes to mind is page 5 in Lesson 1. And at the top of page 5 in Lesson 1, it says, The first step in awakening in this pathway is to just allow this next thought into your mind. Nothing that you experience is caused by anything outside of you, and you experience only the effects of your own choice. Now, that's at the top of page 5 in The Way of Mastery. And then, you know, 3/4 of the way down the page, there's a little paragraph that says, The way of the heart, this pathway that we're trying to introduce you to, is not the way of the intellect. And it's your intellect that jumps up and says, the way is not easy and without effort. That's a completely bogus statement as a title for Lesson 10. I've got all these life experiences that were so painful and so difficult. I have tried so long and so hard to be spiritual or to do meditation or to make more money or to have a healthy relationship, and I failed at every turn. And all of those refutations of the statement, the way is easy and without effort, every one of them comes from the intellect. And on page 5 in Lesson 1, it says, this pathway that we're talking about is not the way of the intellect. Because your intellect was never designed to be your master. It was never designed to be the driver of the bus of your life. Instead, it was designed to be the humble and very simple servant of the awakened heart. Now, what's the awakened heart? What does that phrase mean? It means the higher S, soul. It means your awareness, your consciousness. It means the observer. It means the witness. All these different words. So Lesson 10, the title of Lesson 10, can only have any value. I can only begin to explore it if I recognize that each and every part of my mind that comes up to argue against that is the intellect. And then I take a breath and I come back to Lesson 1 and I say, remember, this pathway is not about the intellect. What has your intellect ever done but generate fear, as it tells you about in Lesson 7? And choose negative thoughts to value, as it talks about in Lesson 8, and wants to fight for its definition of things as being wrong, or this is good and that is bad, rather than acknowledging the neutrality of all events, as in Lesson 9. So here we are in Lesson 10, and the first thing that happens for most people that read this is the intellect jumps up and says, this is not true, and wants to offer all kinds of life experiences and struggles with different spiritual traditions and attempts at meditation and all of these spiritual practices that different people have tried before they come here. And the intellect wants to use all of that as evidence that Lesson 10 is full of baloney. And when that happens, all I can do is recommend all of the above tools that Dr. Michael Rice talks about. That if you're going to listen to this, if you're going to get the Way of Mastery book and read it, please spend more time monitoring your internal physical, mental, and emotional response as you read this slowly and carefully, and watch for the resistance, watch for the judgment, watch for the arguing, and just recognize it as an exercise of the intellect. In an earlier lesson, this book tells us that the intellect can only collect the trivialities of our culture and our language that have been stuffed into it and then play them back out for us. It's what Guy Finley calls the mechanical level of mind. It's what Dr. Michael Rice calls the carbon-based memory or the non-being mind of the ego. So as we proceed in reading Lesson 10, please, for your own benefit, be fully awake and aware in the moment and watch for the resistance that comes up even with the title. The way is easy and without effort. And acknowledge that as far as your intellect goes and knows and has had experience, that's not a very accurate statement. And that's okay, because this pathway is not driven by the intellect. It's driven by something else entirely. So the text reads, "Beloved and holy children of light and of love divine, as always, I come forth to abide with you from that place we share eternally as the one and only begotten offspring of our Creator. I am therefore that mind, capital M mind, which whispers to you in each moment of your inspiration. I am indeed that mind that sneaks into your mind in the space between two fearful thoughts, and thereby remind you of the capital T truth that sets you free." Think about this. Your intellectual mind cannot even comprehend that there is a space between two thoughts, or that there is a consciousness that is not currently residing in physical form that can have an access to your energy or your thought process or your insight and intuition. Your conscious logical mind can't even wrap itself around that. But this text is saying, I am therefore part of that mind which whispers to you in each moment of your inspiration. I am indeed that mind that sneaks into your mind in the space between two fearful thoughts. I am that energy which reminds you that you are connected to something larger than your physical body, than your thoughts about yourself, than your history of life on the planet. The text goes on to say, once I was a man, that is, just like you. I once turned my attention and became identified with a unique being that was birthed in time and faded away from time. And I walked upon your plane as all men and women do. But as I walked upon your planet, I began to ponder the meaning of creation and the purpose of my very existence. And while others seemed to be gleefully caught up in, or at least surrendered to, the ways of the world, as they were seeking out their momentary distractions, their attempts to gain and control as much wealth as they could, and all of the rest, I would often wander off alone. I would sit beneath the trees beside a flowing stream and try to unlock the mystery that shows forth itself as the beauty of a flower, to try to see the power that revealed itself as the wind that would dance across the grasses, and to count the sparkling diamonds shimmering across the surface of a lake as the morning sun arose to shine its light upon it. I began to learn to ask of that source, that mystery, Creator, one that has birthed me, why am I? Where am I? Who am I? My desire increasingly became to know the truth that could set all mankind free. I discovered that unless that freedom became fully manifest in me, it made no sense to talk about it with others. So I sought out the greatest of minds, the best of teachers. And yes, I was blessed by a family structure already dedicated to understanding the mysteries of what they knew as God and Creator. They led me to many such teachers. As my own wisdom began to evolve, the teachers would look upon me and say to one another, quote, something is interesting is occurring here in this son of Joseph, close quotes. But there were already those who knew more about me than I knew yet about myself. Prophets, seers, astrologers, and the wise ones of many cultures knew already that into the framework of the consensus mind of man, which you would call collective consciousness, into that to be dropped a pebble, into that still clear pool, a pebble that would create ripples that would begin to change how the consciousness of humankind perceived itself. I did not yet know these things for myself, for my very birth into this world was veiled in mystery for me, just as your birth was veiled in mystery for you as you took on being human. As I grew, I began to have revealed to me in the depth of my silent prayer and in the depth of my very silent meditation, I had revealed to me glimmers, insights, recognitions, and remembrances of other dimensions. I began to develop the ability to be in communication with masters of my lineage who had long since left the planet. I began to understand that consciousness is not limited to the space and volume of a body at all. As I watched the people in their busy work, I began to see that the vast majority of beings totally confused themselves with the body. They lived as though they dwelt within the body and therefore were imprisoned in some strange way. They lived as if what occurred to the body occurred to them. They lived as if they did not know that they could transcend the body at any moment, that they could taste the vast expanse of consciousness, that they could journey to other times and places with little more than a surrendering of attention to the world that they had made. Now that last line deeply resonates with me all the way back to the first lesson where it says, we choose what we experience. We never experience anything we haven't chosen. And this last line says that we could travel to other times and places with little more than a surrendering of the attention, of the valuing, of the emphasis on what we have created, the world we have made, the thoughts that we value, the judgments that we cling to. If we move out of judgment and into questioning, our world starts to expand exponentially. The text goes on to say, at first, I did not understand these things, and I perceived myself to be quite odd. Within me, there were conflicts as the fears in my consciousness arose, the fears that are part of the human consensus reality. They might take the form of, quote, shall I remain like everyone else? Perhaps I should return to my father's carpentry shop and simply accept that I'm destined to be a carpenter, close quotes. However, there were other voices that spoke to me and called to me that would come to me often in the night. As I developed my ability to discern these other realities, these other dimensions, by shifting my attention from the world of the body to the world of the inner vision, often they would come in the night and stand beside my bed. I came to know who they were. I came to recognize the masters and teachers of a very ancient lineage of which I was a part. They would come and whisper to me, quote, forget not the purpose for which you were sent forth from the mind of the Creator. For through you there shall be birthed the beginning of an ancient remembrance, and your life shall become that which demonstrates to many the truth that only love, capital L love, is real. Close quotes. The point of all that is simple. I want to convey to you yet again that the life I lived as a man was not unlike your very own. I began veiled in mystery, a child among children, a human being struggling to make sense of his world. Yes, there was within me something calling, a longing to know something that the world did not seem to teach. But is it not true that many of you have felt that same call, that same longing to touch what is invisible, to see what cannot be seen, to hear what ears have never heard, to embrace what arms cannot reach, to abide in perfect peace and perfect trust? My offering in this moment is you wouldn't even be hearing these words. You wouldn't be listening to an audio like this. You wouldn't be reading a book like The Way of Mastery unless that were true. And if you can slow down and just question, just allow the answer, the reverberations of answers to that question to come up in you, you'll tap into something that starts to expand your experience of this work. The text goes on to say, beloved friends, please understand well. I say to you yet again, I come only as your brother and your friend. One who has walked as you walk, one who has breathed as you breathe, one who has cried as you cry, one who has laughed as you laugh. I am as you are. If there be anything that I can give unto you, it is simply this. As you look upon your life and every event that unfolds within it, every time you feel that you have failed, every time that you become conflicted, every time that you are sure that you were never, but you will never be able to transcend all of these ups and downs and emotional waves that seem to be the things that come with living in your world, please remember, I have overcome this world, and because I have done it, it is done for you already. It can be done. It has been done. And you will do it as well. if you start questioning, if you start using the tools that are offered to give up your reliance on the intellect, to quit treating your intellect as though it is your deity, your God, your only guide, and to learn another way of being in the world, asking to be shown, tuning into other energies and insights and creativities. The text goes on and asks, why? Because we share the same infinite field of mind, capital M mind, that far transcends all levels and dimensions of manifestation. You can tap into what has already occurred. You need only look upon me, Yeshua, as your brother and friend, and acknowledge that the world has been overcome, and then accept the freedom, which is the effect of its overcoming, accept that freedom as your own, so that you may learn to sit upon your chair after your 5 minutes of abiding as Christ, in which you say to yourself, here I am. Heaven is now. The past has passed away, and I can choose anew. This day I commit myself to teaching only love, by sharing only loving thoughts. This one day I will look upon each one that comes into my experience, and I will first breathe deeply the presence of the Holy Spirit, the presence of the Christ mind, the presence of my infinite connection to all that is, and the one mind of the Creator. And I will look out through eyes that in that moment have been transformed by the simple acknowledgement of the truth, all minds are joined. And I see not a stranger before me, but one who walks as I walk, one who feels as I feel, one who longs as I long, one who is humbled as I am humbled, and one who prays for peace as I have prayed for peace. Therefore, because I see that in the person in front of me, I will give them what they seek, peace. And in that giving, I receive it. Now, this is an actual practice. To my eye and ear, it was gently embedded in the 10th lesson. And it kind of sneaks it in here. It says, remember that exercise about sitting in a chair for 5 minutes just by yourself, with yourself, not with your creator, not with Yeshua, not with your meditation tape, not with your guru, just sitting with yourself. And then you might imagine what it would be like to acknowledge the fact of the creative power of your mind energy, and that whatever you focus your mind energy upon creates your experience of life in that moment. And then it said, and you might even wonder what it would be like to experience being a Christ and to having conscious awareness of that creative power moment to moment. And then here in the 10th lesson, it says, so you might learn to sit in your chair after 5 minutes of abiding as Christ and then say, here I am. Heaven is here now. There's only this moment. The past has passed away and I can choose anew. So this very day, as long as my consciousness allows me to focus on this, I commit myself to teaching only love by sharing only loving thoughts. So this day, each and every person that comes into my experience, before interacting with them, before allowing my thoughts to spin off in the judgment and analysis and competition, before that, I will take a breath and consciously, deeply connect and experience my connection to all things, the great comforter, the energy within me that can provide answers when I ask to be shown. The connection of my conscious awareness to this one mind, the divine mind. I will connect with that before I let my thoughts race ahead and before I speak. And then I will look out through my eyes, which will have been transformed. How and why will they be transformed? Because they will be acknowledging this simple truth. If I was able to tap in to the connection to the Christ mind and the one mind and the great comforter and the Holy Spirit and this intuition and insight, every mind can do that. All minds are joined. And in that moment, I will not see someone in front of me who is a stranger or separate from me. I will see somebody who is connected to the one mind as I am, and a person who walks as I walk, who feels as I feel, who longs as I long, who is humbled as I am humbled, and who prays for peace as I have prayed for peace. And in that next moment, I will extend to them my true nature and my awareness of it and my awareness of their true nature. And I will extend that loving energy and that peace that I have prayed for and I know they have prayed for. And as we talk about in the Reality Management Worksheet process, as I give it, I have received it first. I must experience the peace that transcends all understanding in order to give that peace away. And that's the practice that, to my eye and ear, was hidden in the middle of the 10th lesson, which is a powerful practice. At least I will say it has been a very powerful practice for me. And another way to talk about it in more colloquial terms is, everybody I meet, I could choose to put the lens on my experience of them and my interpretation of them the following lens. Every human being is doing the best they can in each new present moment with whatever resources they have in that moment. Period. Full stop. And I don't know that that's true. I've talked about this before, but I do know that the more I pretend that that's true, the more I prefer my life experience, the better my life experience gets, sometimes by leaps and bounds. And there's an added benefit to that. If I choose to use that lens, either the lens that's in the 10th lesson here on page 123 of the Way of Mastery, or the lens that says, every human being is doing the best they can in each new present moment with whatever resources they have in that moment. One of the side benefits of that is if I keep actively applying that to people, and I enjoy how my life experience gets better and better the more I do that, eventually I'm going to wake up one day and realize I am one of those people who has always done the best he or she could in every moment. And in that moment, when I have that realization, it's not possible for me to beat myself up. I effortlessly step into the peaceful gentleness of being able to be understanding and respectful and gentle with myself, knowing that if I could have done differently, I would have, knowing that no one has ever deserved any of the abuses they've experienced. So, this whole teaching, this whole book, this whole set of practices translates to me into a pathway in a very real sense, in a different way to engage with life events and the people that I encounter. And I use all the other tools that I find. I use the reality management worksheet. I use the EFT tapping. I use meditation. I use exercise. I use loving kindness meditation. With the intention to be more consciously aware moment to moment of what I am doing with my mind energy, because that is the creative force that I've been given dominion over. It's that creative flow that's always on. I don't have any choice about that. And yet, I do have the choice moment to moment of whether or not I point it towards angry thoughts or fearful thoughts or scared thoughts or confused thoughts or overwhelmed thoughts. And wherever I choose to focus that energy, I create more of what I'm focusing on. And as Dr. Rice talks about in a lot of his lectures, many of us are in the process of unconscious co-creation. And the goal of a lot of this kind of work, the intention with a lot of this work, is to move more and more into that conscious realm of what we are doing with our creative energies, our thought, our mind energy, our thought focus, etc. So again, to recap, if you're coming into lesson 10, please spend a little bit more of your mind energy watching for the parts of you that will protest this and argue against it and feel tense, and understand that, yes, in terms of the way of the intellect, this lesson 10 is completely false. Because as far as the intellect is concerned, this way is not easy. This is quite difficult. Right? It takes considerable effort to identify an unhealthy habit and then to identify a healthy set of behaviors that you want to practice until they become a habit, and then to stay with it and focused and diligent and conscious long enough that it becomes a habit, and then pour enough energy into it until that becomes the default habit. That's a really energy-intensive process, and that's the way of the intellect. And that's not what Lesson 10 is referring to. Lesson 10 is referring to the way of the awakened heart. And it's saying that when you're ready to step into the pathway of the way of the heart, and you're ready to live more in this direct observation and open questioning and allowance and surrender and trust, you will begin to understand that the pathway is easy and without effort, and that moving into the flow of life and allowance of life and using your mind energy to realign with your true nature and realign to a loving, peaceful, gratitude-based focus moment to moment is far more beneficial and productive, because it's going to be creating the kind of life that you say you want, that most everybody would say they want. They want peace, they want light, they want love, they want abundance, they want success. And the way of the heart and this pathway is more like, you know, the way of the intellect is like trying to stand in the middle of the Mississippi River and change its flow. Whereas the way of the heart is being in a beautiful little skiff boat and going with the flow of the river, going where it takes you, enjoying the abundance of experience and life, the sights and sounds and energies in the flow of life or the flow of the river. So that's our offering with this work. It is very, very different than anything I had been exposed to prior to this work, except for maybe Krishnamurti's writings. And it is something that, you know, takes the Western mind some work to get used to, because the Western mind is so well conditioned into judgment and resistance and struggle and efforting. So it can be quite a shock to the sensitivities when one reads a message in a lesson that says, hey, this pathway is easy and without effort. So here's hoping that this is resonating with some positive stimulation for you. We'll pick up again tomorrow and again on Friday with Lesson 10. And I would encourage you to try on this exercise, whether it's the more pedantic, hey, every human being is doing the best they can in each moment with whatever resources they have, or whether it's the message from Lesson 10, which says, this one day I will look upon each one that comes into my experience, and before I let my thoughts go crazy, and before I say a word, I will breathe deeply into the presence of the Holy Spirit, and I will allow my eyes to be transformed by the simple knowledge of the truth that all minds are joined, and I'm not looking at a stranger before me, but I'm looking at someone who walks as I walk, who feels as I feel, who longs as I have longed, who is humbled as I have been humbled, and who prays for peace as I have prayed for peace. And in that next moment, I will give them what they seek. I will extend the peace of the Christ mind to them from my conscious connection to that mind within myself. And in that giving, I receive it. And watch how that experience, that conscious exercise, changes your experience of life. That's the invitation. I'm grateful to every one of you who's joining us for this little exercise in the way of mastery. I am honored that you're here and participating, and we'll be back again tomorrow and Friday. I will remind us all that you and I and everyone you ever meet comes from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are the energy of love and creation expressing in form, and everything else is false. And I'll welcome Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Much appreciation.
You're most welcome and deserving. Have a wonderful show.
Thank you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. Today is Wednesday, April 27th, 2022. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. Press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. And we'd love to hear your comments and questions, because that makes this your show. And while we're waiting on Michael to get dialed in, I'll just direct you to our website again. And we've made a lot of changes. I'm getting ready to send out an email by the end of the day. And so if you're not on our email list, join it as soon as the radio show's over. Go to the website and roll down to the very bottom. It says join the mailing list. And that way you'll get all of the newsletters. The archives are listed on the website. So if you go up to multimedia and go down to news, that you'll see it says newsletters. And you can click on that, and all of the past newsletters are listed there. So you can pick them up if you missed them. And the Google has approved the revision to the app. We don't have Apple done yet, so sometimes they take a little bit longer. And so if you've not updated the most recent one on your Android, please do so. There's been some more changes. And we invite you to use the tools to work in your life. There's lots of information out there. And I was going to share Aria. We had been teaching her. She hurt her leg one day, and we did orthobiotomy on it. And that's a procedure that Michael and I took training on several years ago. And on her own today, we were having a tea party, me and the dinosaur and Aria and Dog Meat, which is her stuffed animal, and a horse. And the horse fell off of the table. And she picked it up, and she goes, oh, let's do, and she couldn't think of the name, orthobiotomy. And so I said it, and she says, yeah. And so she started moving the horse's leg in four directions. And she goes, okay, now breathe, breathe. And so I think Michael got it on video, and he'll probably post it out later. But she's just amazing, the things that she picks up on. And at this time, I'll welcome Michael.
Well, thank you, dear heart, and you're right. She is absolutely amazing and delightful. I was sharing with someone the other day, they were looking at the picture on my Facebook page of our greens, and that you and I had green thumbs, and I shared how when we would open the garden through the winter and such, she would go in and pet the plants, and she'd stand over them and kind of wiggle her fingers and say, water, 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 like she was watering the plants. And she would shrink herself down into a little ball and ask Jeannie to water her. So Jeannie would stand over her wiggling her fingers, water, water, water. And then she would get up and stretch her arms out real wide and get big. It's like showing the plants what to do, and they're doing it. They're rocking. I mean, the greens are just amazing. And we're in the process of, we started this morning building our third garden bed. It's going to be a space about, 12 by maybe another 8 foot space, something like that. So we're having fun. Invite everybody to consider with the way things are going, the way the so-called food is being produced in our culture, and the way supply is going and money is going, you might be really thankful you've got a garden to feed yourself with. It's easy. It's fun. And oftentimes I hear people talking about, and there comes a time where there's an opening that happens, but it's like, oh, too much work to do my own food. I just eat that junk that they serve in boxes. I just put it in the oven and, you know, boom, I got a meal. Well, no, you haven't got a meal and you're not feeding yourself. And we start to recognize that taking the time, I don't care how much you get paid, I don't care how many $1 million an hour you make, if you're not feeding yourself, you're not living fully. And so make the space to have food be a part of your life process. It's powerful. And beyond that, we're here to talk about forgiveness and all of the corollary tools that go along with the forgiveness process, with a goal in mind. And the goal is one of recognizing that there is a presence eternally there. We don't have to call it forward or conjure it up. There is a presence, and our verbiage, our language speaks about it as conscious, active, present love. And the goal of the work is to be out of your mind, to make yourself available to that presence, to learn from the presence of that presence, to become unwound from the generational patterns of hostility or fear. And to be available for transformation through your interaction with that presence. Cultivate your relationship with it. Forgive everything in you that is unlike it so that you're available. So that you, instead of being aware of something that's going on in the mind, something that's resonating in the mind, that you are aware of the power and the flow of energy in which you live, move, and have your being, and to begin to unwind and to undo everything unlike that presence. Forgiveness meaning the removal of what does not belong in your structure, being available for instruction. And instruction may not come in an intellectual way, although your mind may interpret it for you in a way that you can understand. And we look to explain it in words, but it can't be explained in words. Instructions on how to access it can be explained, but the experience itself is an experience. Can't be spoken of. You remember Paul, when he fell into that experience, he says, whether in or out of the body, I do not, for I saw things which I could not utter. Couldn't translate them into words. And when you're available to that energy, everything that was important, everything that was traumatic, everything that was presence, which you are an expression of, becomes forgivable, becomes removable. And then to arrive at a place where sometimes it's just unspoken. You come to the precipice, you create a space for it, and then you just have to be with the experience. And then you turn around and try to explain it, and a lot of times it's just not explainable. But it sure is sweet. It sure is an awesome place to experience your life from. So that's what we're here to support happening, to become available. Eternal something in which you live, move, and have your being, and to be willing to forgive everything that's unlike it. And when you tap into it, I'm hesitating with words because it really becomes a state without words. In fact, words often become an interruption to it. Yeah, that's kind of the space I'm in right now. Is would rather just be with it than speak about it, but it's kind of hard to have an interaction on a community on a radio show when we're not saying anything. So we'll move in the direction of words, and or we'll ask you to direct where the show is going to go today. If you're out there in listener land and you've been doing this work, what's your experience of it? Is there anything that we can help clarify for you? Are there any questions about any of the tools? And there's so many different tools. Of course, the reality management forgiveness process. Communication. Did you hear what I think I said? Responsibility communication tool. Apology tool. Codependence to interdependence worksheet. And the power person dynamic. Recognizing that alignment with your purpose. You know, being on purpose means that I know who I am and what my purpose is, and every energy that I engage in supports that. So there's the purpose, personal power, and commitment worksheet. The commitment itself from the Healing Through Relationship workshop, recognizing that there are no diseased relationships, they're just individuals in relationships in need of healing. And each person that chooses responsibility, independent of what someone else does, can choose to do their healing work. So if you're there in listener land and you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, our call-in number is 563-999-3581. Let's have a conversation. What's on your mind? What can we support you with? A conversation with someone the other day, and they were talking about ego, and I was doing a little bit of research on that topic and came up with a definition of the ego that Booker T. Washington offered. He said, ego is the anesthetic that deadens the pain of stupidity. And what's the most prized possession of ego? The most prized perception of this non-being mind, of the false self, is perception. Most people think that perception, that's the end-all and the be-all, without recognizing that perception is simply a construct of the mind. Literally everything that you see, everything you hear, taste, smell, is a construct. And when you recognize it's a construct of something. Everything that's a construct of something must depend on past. If we're depending on the past for the constructs of our mind, are we ever really experiencing the present? And if we're not, can we ever directly be available to the experience of that presence that we're talking about? So
we have
when you give,
up.
Oh great, well, let me finish one more thought here. So when you give the ego a tool with which to collapse perception, its most prized perception, you're going to become its sworn enemy. And, you know, people love the idea of the explained result of forgiveness, but hate the idea of doing it, because it has to give up its attachment to its most prized possession. So it's an interesting process to be inviting people into the very thing that is the solution, and yet the part of them that constructs the way they see the world thinks of that as the greatest enemy. So it engenders some interesting conflict. And let's say hello to our first hand up, sweetie.
All right, and it is, I believe, Miss Julie, area code 541. You're on the air.
Hi, am I unmuted?
You're loud and clear, young lady. Welcome. How are you?
Oh, good, great. Hi, I'm okay. I came in a little late, and I'm hearing a somber tone, and I wasn't sure what I had missed that you'd been saying, but now I kind of have picked up on it, I think.
Yeah, it's actually it's kind of personally myself at this moment, I'm just in this quiet space of like, I'd rather not withdraw from this and this presence that I'm in right now to have a conversation, but that's what we're doing. So it's more like I think you're picking up on, I'd rather just do this radio show in total silence and just be with this energy. So that's what you're picking up on.
I can respect that. You know, maybe we could all just do that. Wow. Like a still point, a radio still point.
Well, it might be a little rough on the airwaves and everybody connecting to just tune in to no sound. So we are kind of in a medium that requires some noise, and so here we are. But what's on your mind? What's happening for you today?
I have an experience I can share that seems really fresh and alive in me right now. I was I was previously feeling bummed or unsure about how to proceed on some things, and just, you know, just telling the truth about that to myself started to open up, you know, just being receptive to truth again and love and a loving perspective. And, you know, that's the opposite of the ego, like you were talking, you know, fear is usually what the ego is all about. And I'm glad you mentioned that it's a perception created by the mind, a construct in the past. So it reminded me of that time I talked once about kinetic energy, and the definition of kinetic energy is something that's in motion because it's been put in motion as a construct, and it doesn't really change its course unless another force acts upon it. And I think as I'm saying it now, that could be a neutral energy, you know, it can, but it's like our thoughts, we get them put in motion. We put them in motion for a certain outcome. And unless it's interfered with or interrupted or another force is put upon it, it will continue. And I think that's a law of physics or something. But I was thinking about these constructs of the past that have been put in motion, you know, as unconsciously and without blame, as they have been. And so as we apply our forgiveness process, we can have that removed. We actually put a stop to goals we have set that have been in motion for a long time, and we replace or we reutilize our energy that has been freed up from having that locked in place and being on that position, and we now create loving goals and what we'd rather see and what we now commit to, and we bring it forth to the present. And you know, it's so powerful to notice that that's what we maintain. We keep that in motion, and it's a new opportunity and a new possibility. And the more we can be conscious of all this, you know, and even if, you know, I have to use the word overwhelming. If I feel overwhelmed by all the balls in the air, you know, or whatever it is showing up like that, I can just simply let the balls drop, let the illusion of the constructs of the past dissolve into a space of love and new creation. And it's kind of that simple, that willingness, palpable. I can really feel it as an energy moving through me. You know, that is the new creation with a loving, conscious, present, active mind. How was that?
You know, when you speak of the thoughts that we put in motion, I think mm-hmm. that for most people, the majority of the time, they don't put their thoughts in motion at all. Their thoughts mm-hmm. are put in motion by what they've been programmed with, what they've been brainwashed with. You know, the alarm goes off and thoughts go in motion. Oh, it's time for me to be startled. It's time for me to get up. It's time for me. And it's not really set in motion by us. And one of the objectives of the work is to stop the motion that's automatic in us at some point and take time to cultivate really truly being awake and aware in this present moment and with that presence that underlies it all, as opposed to always running the mouth, running the mind, just standing in that space of connectedness and being, and from awareness then initiate thought processes that really are in alignment with and in harmony with your true purpose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yeah, all of that, true. So the oh, the word motion. You know, I think inertia is another word in physics, and I think isn't that a sort of a blocking of motion? I don't remember.
No. Inertia simply means that if there were no external forces acting upon a body that's in motion, it would continue in the direction it's going at the speed it's going forever. Now, friction, you know, is an action that inhibits inertia. So we say, I throw the ball. Now, if there were no friction, once I set that ball in motion, that ball would go through eternity until it's acted upon by an outside force. Well, friction happens to act on it, and it's not too long before the ball starts to drop toward the earth because its motion is slowed by that friction and by gravity. So inertia simply is that body's moving in a particular direction at a particular rate of speed until it's acted upon by something else.
Okay, well, I thought that's what kinetic energy was.
Well, kinetic energy is motion, but inertia describes what will happen with that kinetic energy if nothing else acts on it. Here it goes. It's on its trajectory, and unless something else influences it, that motion is going to continue.
So one could ask, what is it that energizes the eternal, you know, perpetual motion? You know, what energizes that?
Well, I think the most important motion we could pay attention to is the motion of life. And the best definition I've been able to come up with to date is that life is love at motion in a cell, moving through a cell. And anything that we do to inhibit that, you know, when we tap into hostility, fear, they're the energetic patterns that inhibit that experience and restrict life, in fact, ultimately kill.
So there, that brings me to this new thought that came through a few moments ago, that so the world of perception, which is an illusory reality created by our minds of the past, is like
an illusion. Doesn't mean something that doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. Just to be clear, in this work, illusion doesn't mean something that doesn't exist. Illusion comes from the word measured. You know, if something's measured into motion, if we take a kinetic energy, we measure a certain quantity of energy and put it behind that baseball, that motion has been measured, and it's going to create the illusion of motion. It's going to move. It doesn't mean something that doesn't exist.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. So not illusory, but a construct. You know, then when we are, I guess, able to remove our perceptions and our evidential mind and our replicate being perspective, you know, then we can replace with the movement of love and life in every cell. And it's a choice. It's an opportunity that's there all the time as long as we're truthful about what's in the way. You know, what is it that I'm resisting looking at that still has power in my life, this unconscious driving force that I've got to have. You know, I'm somehow attached and, you know, addicted.
In Aramaic, that resistance, the resistor, is actually quite literally the definition of Satan.
Mm-hmm.
Satan's not a dude with a red suit, a tail, and a pitchfork. It simply means resistance. Resistance to the movement of what is, of life.
So that's like a pseudo force. It's egoically created attempt to block God, you know, or usurp God's claim and call it its own. Would you say that? I don't know.
I think that sounds fairly accurate.
Yeah. So anyway, you know, the pure mechanics of all this is like you said, it's real. It's not illusory. It's actually what perpetuates lies. I just put that word in there, but it perpetuates, period, whatever it's been addressed to or intended to.
The flow of love through a cell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the flow of love through a cell would be more addressing it from truth, which is used to create a lie. I mean, God, like you say, the creator says yes, you know, we are creator energy. And if we want to keep creating lies and set that in motion and never be responsible for stopping that motion because we realize, wow, I have a responsibility here, you know, then, okay, so I live in this world, this kind of line that I cross back and forth over of truth and uncovering what I've been covering up. So the lies that I put into motion from the truth of who I am, I actually have put shadows into my life. And now I uncover them as best I can. And when I do, I live differently. And I can create, for example, a whole new custom-designed, I'm in this process of creating, how do I, with my boyfriend specifically, create a way for us to address conflicts so that we rise through them and above to have the success of our loving relationship be most important. And I'm having to do it. I can't just teach him Michael Rice's words, you know. I'm having to do this right at where the rubber meets the road in our relationship and use the best tools I have and ask him to if he's willing to use his best tools. And I'm starting to get it, how I can reach him.
Well, my offering would be the most powerful way to reach him is to make sure that you are life, that you are the active presence of love. You know, I was talking with someone this morning, and he was talking about this idea of, you know, I love you. And it's like, well, let's not lie to ourselves. You've never loved anybody. You're never going to love anybody. And no, I don't love you. You are my friend. I cherish you, but I don't love you. Because love isn't something I can do to you. It's what I am. And he's like, well, but, you know, if you tell people you love them, then they know. It's like, that's how you create healing. It's like, no, not true. He gave me an example of someone who was brought up in a fairly religious home and was a young girl. And she decided that she wanted to be a porn star. And there were people that I knew fairly well and spent time with them. And I had been around this young girl from the time she was a small child and being brought up by parents or grandparents and parents who were really cherishing her and said the words, I love you, all the time, but didn't impact the direction of her life and what she wanted to do until somebody showed up. And as opposed to saying, I love you, were willing without resistance to be with what was driving her mind and to be literally to be conscious, active, present love with her. Mm-hmm. And all the cajoling of the grandmother who was just, aghast their granddaughter would do such a thing after such an upbringing. And the grandfather was a minister actually, and just, you know, they were aghast. But the words, I love you, and being aghast at what this child was wanting to do didn't bring her any healing. And then there was a person who had been trained in this work and been doing this work who just spent time with her, as opposed to being aghast or judging her, was just like, wow, what is it? What's going on in your life? What do you want to do? Where do you want? And by simply bringing forward a conscious act of present love, the energetic patterns that had her wanting to do this, and I think likely, although I wasn't present, I got most of the story secondhand, but likely it was in defiance, in rebellion to these good parents that she's going to go off and do this. And when someone was able to be with her, embracing her fully in the presence of love, accepting, just hearing what she had to say, that energy just dissipated. And, you know, the whole rebellion and I'm going to go off and do this crazy thing just disappeared. And I would define that as healing. And, you know, people say all kinds of words all the time, like the word, I love you, but it doesn't represent anything real. What represents something real is if I experience myself as conscious, active, present love, and I can be that with another person, it's the actual presence of being of that active presence of, not some words about some mushy experience, but when I can stand in that space as active present love, then the aberrant energies in myself or another person that come out from the unconscious are going to begin to dissolve. And it won't be because I said certain words, although certain words might help. It won't be because I changed anybody's mind. It'll be because there was active present love in a space where something less than love was motivating activity and behavior, feelings, emotions. And in the presence of love, those things literally are energetically transmuted. And all of a sudden, poof, something that was yesterday, this is going to last forever, I'm going to do this, but it was out of harmony with life, just disappeared. And so to me, the practice is that of really, literally, truly being present. Now, if your mind is saying, and this is what's wrong with you, and this is what you need to fix, and being isn't present, then I'm probably working on a projection of my own, something that's mine that I project into my brain's image of them, and I need to get to the point where I can be the presence of love for that energy in me, because that's the master healer. That's what creates the transmutation or the change in energy.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Well, so that's kind of what happened for me today. I was focusing on I drew a little picture like sometimes we do in the worksheets, and I was asking myself the question, what can I do differently rather than being in the blame game? And so I drew a picture of two sick people, and the arrow pointing at each other, like, I want you to do it differently, you know, and then I turned it around. I want to do it differently. What can I do towards us, you know? And so I wrote the date down on this piece of paper, and it's my mom's birthday, even though she passed away in 1994. So
right.
I've really been kind of touching in on my mother's relationship with her, I think, fourth or fifth husband. I'm not sure. I can't remember it. But he was
right.
The second to the last one. So, and I touch in on her sadness and her pain and her grief and depression and the hardship of that relationship, and just knowing that it was an energy of the past, you know, that she didn't know how to break free from. And
right.
And here I am, you know, replaying that same, you know, disappointment energy in me. And so I got the question, you know, what can I do differently? And so I was realizing my disappointment was coming from feeling rejected when I am offering my best. So that's my goal. What I most want to offer is my best. And I've And I often come up against being rejected or criticized for how I'm perceiving I'm sharing my best. So I think that's a really good place for my boyfriend and I to look, because I have a feeling he's got a resonance of disappointment also. And so we have this common issue.
Matching bags of garbage.
Yeah. And,
it's like
and,
a mind shifter.
And it's like recycling it, you know. And yeah, sure, I'm ready for that.
Why is this happening to me again? Maybe it's one of the original books on recycling.
I know. Okay, I'm ready.
It's safe and healing.
Mm-hmm.
And I deeply enjoy it. It's safe and healing,
mm-hmm.
and I deeply enjoy it.
Okay.
When people reject me and want me to do better. Breathe. Notice what that did to your breath.
And I think I'm already doing my best. I'm going to add that as my first thing.
Okay.
Already think I'm doing my best. See, that's what I have to go through this, because I asked the question, how can I do this differently? That's a responsible question.
Yes. And it sounds like what your mind did, you know, remember we've talked about where the Course in Miracles says you've got to return your mind to the point at which the original event happened. And that's not a function of memory, that's a function of forgiveness. So here you are processing your mother decades ago in a marriage, a relationship where it sounds like her hardship is similar to the one you're dealing with, of being rejected.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So what did you say? This is the process of forgiveness. It's not what?
Well, I was talking about in the Course in Miracles. In essence, what the Course says is you can't do forgiveness. It's not of you. There's not enough processing power in our own brain being or non-being mind especially to carry out all of the energetic dynamics are going to be required to dissolve something like that kind of an inherited trauma. But you have a part to play in it. And the part, the Course says, your part is to return your mind to the point at which the original error happened. Now, the average person would go, so I have to remember this event that happened, you know, God, who knows when I have to. And what I'm offering is, and this is the beauty of the forgiveness process as Yeshua offers it, returning your mind to the point where the original event happened is not a function of memory. The average person would say, well, I have to remember that. No, it's not a function of memory. It's a function of forgiveness. When I understand, when I get this genius piece of information from this guy Yeshua, that it's a goal that's driving my mind to access this pained construct that I'm experiencing, and I realize that, as I said earlier, the enemy of the ego, the most prized possession is perception, and the enemy of the ego is something that collapses perception. So now we hand somebody the tool of forgiveness and cancel the goal. And when the goal is canceled, that pain perception collapses in on itself.
Mm-hmm.
And here's where returning the mind to the point at which the error happened is a function of forgiveness. When I cancel that goal to the degree that I'm willing and vital enough to go there, my perception collapses in on itself, and now there's a pathway into that original energetic assault that happened. And it sounds like as you began to move in that direction and around this issue that's moving between yourself and your boyfriend, that as you're doing your forgiveness work, you're going back and processing some of what you were probably an observer, or maybe it was a power person dynamic, even with mom, decades ago.
Right. Well,
That's what needs to move in the presence of active love.
It's okay. Yeah. This is an interesting trigger for me that I've seen a photo of my mom looking so sad and depressed about a relationship. I just, you know, and it's just energetically, you know, there because it's inside me, of course.
Right.
So I can see it. So there's a clue there, you know, if I want to see it or if I want to remain depressed the rest of my
powerful
life.
Powerful clue.
Yeah.
Powerful clue. And what you might advance your own process with is to imagine for a moment that you are your mom and do
mm-hmm.
a worksheet as your mom in that circumstance.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That's good.
And you may find a whole different level of processing through. Remember that processing is the ability to hold love conscious, active, and present when something less than love comes up.
Yes. Yes. And okay, that's it. What was that a definition of being a space of love?
Processing is the ability to hold love conscious, active, and present when something less than love comes up.
Okay, so that's
and so
me, alive.
That's you, but as you do a
yeah.
Correct. The active present love is in you, or there's someone there who's holding it for you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And or you can process your boyfriend. It doesn't mean you fix something. This processing isn't a function of thought. It's a function of love. And when love is present, so if something's coming up in your boyfriend that you don't like, that blah, 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 do you bounce off of it with something that's of unlike love in yourself? Now you're in the matching bags of garbage relationship. Or when you cancel the goal you have and restore yourself to the presence of love, then you can be in the space where maybe something that he's not going to be able to process for himself for 100 years. And then you turn around and he's able to be the space of active present love for you and something that you might not be able to process on your own for 100 years. And that's the beauty and the power of relationship is that we can be that space of active present love for each other. But I'm not that space of active present love when I'm in resistance and anger and upset about ostensibly about what you did. Because, of course, I'm in anger and upset. What's moving in me is moving in me.
Okay, so I want to move this to another direction real quick. 2 days ago, I was at my orthodontist appointment and talking to one of the receptionists. And it turns out she's pregnant and about to have a baby, like first or second week of May, and it's breached.
Mm.
And so this is an example of what I do, but then I feel like, how can I do this? So I think this is a Ruka realm. I said, I'll be a space of love for you, but I basically said, you know, I taught her what I could, and I said, you know, just be open and willing to receive guidance on how to get through this, and I'll be praying for you. That's what I said. And so then there's this commitment I made to her, and I was trying to tune into that and say to God, how am I going to do this? I just committed something that I really don't know how to do. And I just fell asleep in that prayer and woke up, I forget how now yesterday, but I just woke up aware of that I really care and I am being present for her in a way that I can.
What a
and
gift.
So, yeah, so, yeah, and I was going to call you yesterday and ask for advice, you know, but, I mean, like from you and Jeannie, what do you do with a breached baby about to be born, you know? But basically I wanted to help her reduce stress about it. That was what I wanted to help with. Leave the rest to God,
And it sounds like you got once you made that, sincerely made that request or were in willingness, it sounds like you got direct guidance on what it looks like to be that space.
I don't know. I guess so, yeah. I mean, I had to give it up.
Well, you just shared it.
I love the definition of Ruka. Isn't it Ruka that was given to us for the removal of the errors of our thoughts? Was something like that definition?
She who undoes the effects of our errors and teaches us the truth.
Teaches us the truth, yeah. And so to be open for that is all I can do, because that's what I was trying to tell the woman, the young woman, you know, to be that space, you know, of willingness for a good outcome, which is the truth. You know, I don't know. Anyway, conceptualizing
and
is not it. It's just that, yeah.
Conceptualizing is not it. That was going to be my point, conceptualizing it. No, that's not where
yeah.
it comes from. And when we turn it, when you turn it over to Ruka, it is not a function of anything that we can conceive of in our minds. Oh,
mm-hmm.
I need to say the right words. Oh, I need to. It is a state of being available to that presence. It isn't that presence or that power is going to look in on your life and say, oh, this is what's wrong. You have to change this and this and this. It doesn't look like it. That's how we'd like it to look. But it is a result of allowing the space for that presence to infill you.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Wow.
And it's not going to look, there you go, there it is right there, that breath is where you just bit off and spit out a chunk of it. That's where that was processing right there. That's where that shift takes place. This look back to 40 seconds ago and to now, what's the difference in the way you feel?
It was like that, okay, I went, and I had a breath, right? And it was in the same moment, letting go of what doesn't belong and letting in what does.
That's Ruka. It's
mm-hmm.
not an intellectual process. It's not a head process. It's when
right.
the energy is right for that kind of a shift to occur. And you'll know it by the breath you take. And the breath is Ruka in Aramaic. The breath
mm-hmm.
is Ruka.
Is Ruka spelled R-U or R-O-O?
Well, actually, you'll find it throughout the work in two different ways. Initially, in our translation work with the Kouros manuscript, we spell it R-U-K. And then, and I don't even know why, some of the translators decided to shift it into R-O-O-K-H-A. So I use the convention now, generally speaking, R-O-O-K-H-A when I'm writing about it. But I still, because originally when I worked with it was R-U, I still think in terms of R-U-K-H-A.
Oh, well, I bet it's for pronunciation clarification.
I think it was more, yeah, I think it was more phonetic, going with phonetics,
yeah. Okay. All right. Well, I'm complete for now. I just wanted to share and kind of match your energy,
cool.
whatever it was. And I respect
Sweet.
You. I'll be respectful of your silence and your beingness with whatever you need to. And it's really an honor to, I don't know, join you there, really. It's not personal. It's just, I know that's where we're joined, all of us.
I'm with you. Sweet.
Yeah.
Well, you have a blessed
okay.
day.
Thank
All right,
you. Thank you. Thank you.
Appreciate you.
Bye.
Okay. Take care.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye. All right. Miss Jeannie, you've got another hand up. We've got about 10 minutes.
Actually, the other hand has dropped off the switchboard. So
we lost
else,
it.
We did. But someone
oh, my
else,
goodness. We need another
we've
hand.
Got 9 minutes, so we can handle another topic. Press one.
Somebody out there, have you got a hand to pass to us? Take your hand, if you've got a hand, and hit one. And let's have a conversation. If you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, the call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you're listening to the show. And so if you're on one of those syndicated things where you don't get back to our switchboard, if you call that number, you'll be listening directly to the show. And then if you push 1, which I'm inviting you to do right now, I'm sure that if I were in your hometown and just finished having the conversation that I had from a platform at your local library or university or prison or church or town hall, whatever, if I walked down off the stage, you'd be walking over and saying, well, Michael, what about, well, the idea of this radio show is to have a dialogue about the what about that's on your mind. So it's your turn to direct the energy or the direction the show is going to go. And so push 1 and let's talk about it. How can we support you?
It is all quiet.
On the Western Front.
Yeah.
Well, what's on your mind, sweetie?
Not much. Julie just sent me a text, and she said, everyone's in Steel Point.
There you go. Could well be. Well, actually, we did, you know, back when we, before we had decided to do the year-long program of Steel Point Breathing once a month, we did a single standalone Mind Shifters and Steel Point session. And it was so powerful, I actually ended up saying to Jeannie, would you stay with the Zoom screen and guide people while I go and breathe? And I went and took about, I don't know, maybe 30 or 40 minutes of that session and breathed while Jeannie was there to support people through the Zoom link. And it was, when I came back to it, it was the first time, you know, in all the years I've been doing Steel Point breathing with groups, you know, one person will usually go to Steel Point and then another, and we'll go back and forth and be a different person each moment. And everybody was in Steel Point at exactly the same time. And it was profoundly powerful. And it was just like, okay, we're going to do this once a month now from now on. So that's where that Mind Shifters and Steel Point Breathing year-long program came from. Which, if you'd like to join us, it happens the second Saturday of each month at 11 o'clock in the morning. And then the following Tuesday, so there are two sessions each month of the Saturday, and then the Tuesday following that Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern time, each of these times are Eastern, then there's another session where we step into processing. And that's developed into, it's a small group, but it's developed into a really tight-knit group of people that are really just, you know, opening a space for deepening community. It's pretty sweet, pretty powerful. So if you're out there in listener land, let's talk about it. What's on your mind? Five, six, three, nine, 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 3581. One of the ways that you can tell that love is not conscious, active, and present in you is, remember we talked about David Bohm, the physicist who coined the term sustained incoherence. And that is that people had a belief that their problems were caused by something that was happening outside of them, when the truth was the problems were caused by what was going on within them, and in particular, their thoughts. And he coined sustained incoherence to represent the idea that people hold on to the belief that somebody or something else is the reason this is happening to them again. And, you know, when you get down to the science of it, I mean, everybody's story who's playing the why is this happening to me again game. It's like, but gee, when I was a kid, this happened. When I was a teenager, this happened. When I was a young man or a young woman, and then when I got, and then when, and then when, and here I am, and it's decades later, and it's still happening. How can this be so precise? Well, it's precise for everyone because it's happening inside of us. And David Bohm talked about this state of sustained incoherence, where I keep perpetuating the same energetic patterns. What Julie just really kind of bared her soul to was how she took on that pattern with mom. What was that? 30-some years ago? When we refuse to own that it's us, we think, well, I've got to change somebody else. Then I keep engaging in the energetic patterns that perpetuate the insanity, and I keep refusing to believe that I've got anything to do with it. This has got to be somebody else's fault. So, of course, that leads to the whole game of blame. It's always everybody else's fault. And then, of course, in order to avoid the pain, once the blame starts, rage just steps right in. And one becomes controlled by that dynamic we call the power person dynamic. So so-called love turns into hate. What is when people fall in love? It's really matching bags of garbage. It's the situation, the circumstance, and the perfect relationship that's going to give them the opportunity to look at their own sustained incoherence again and again and again and again and again and again and again until they stop and go, oh, instead of bigger weapons and more terrorism so I can force him into change, I need to stop my sustained incoherence. I need to go inside myself.
Julie's got her hand back up.
Well, then let's say hello to Julie. Gee, we haven't heard from her for so long. We've got about a minute and a half. Julie, go for it.
Hi. Okay, you can hear me, right? Yeah?
Go for it, yeah.
Okay. Well, I was just getting this other kind of mind shifter or goal that instead of staying myself in crucifixion.
Say it again.
Staying, like keeping myself staying in something.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So I made up a verb, staying myself, in crucifixion, the pain of crucifixion. I release myself, and I spelled release, it just came, release, R-E-A-L-L-E-A-S-E, release myself to the truth of breathing resurrection. I know that's all concept, but basically I was, that kind of came as I also had this remembering of that moment where I released, and I also was receptive just on the show
so,
with you a little while ago.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So what I hear you describing is your mind's trying to put into words this energetic mm-hmm. process that's going on inside of you and the instructions that you're getting. And
yeah,
the words will never fully describe it, but you sure got right on target with moving it in the direction. And that's what it takes. It's not the intellect figuring something out. It's being available to that presence that teaches. And it's gonna show's mm-hmm. gonna cut us off in just a few seconds, but yeah, that's awesome. The way you language that. And, you know, we're trying to explain what's really not explainable, but it gets close enough where we go, ah, yeah, that makes sense. Oh, that could open the space for me, in me. So nice work.
So real quick,
cool.
It's safe and healing for me to allow the holy instant to work for me.
Go for it. Yay.
Anyway,
thank
you, Michael. And thank you,
all right,
everyone.
Blessings.
All
everybody,
right.
Create the best year yet of your eternal lives. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings. Bye-bye.